Trends in the Digital Age.
This is Charlotte Talks. I'm Mike Collins. Many different individuals and organizations have long been concerned about sustainability and have been working hard to create a sustainable environment. But most times, those individuals and organizations work in silos, doing their studies and analysis, producing reports, trying to make things better. But that has made it very difficult to get the broad picture of how we're doing. Well, now, Sustain Charlotte, a nonprofit that in just 4 years has become this region's leading voice for sustainability, has compiled in one report the data from all these disparate studies and initiatives. And the result is a kind of report card on the impact of these efforts. Today, we go over our grades with Shannon Binns, founder and executive director of Sustain Charlotte. Welcome back.
Thank you. Good to be here.
Just here last week. Going to be a co-host soon. In the course of compiling this report, Sustain Charlotte worked with a number of organizations, not the least of which are Mecklenburg County and the City of Charlotte, and we're joined by representatives of both. Dina DiOrio is Mecklenburg County Manager, and John Autry is a Charlotte City Councilman and Chairman of the Council's Environment Committee. Welcome back to both of you.
Thank you.
Nice to have you here.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
To compile this report card, you used years of data, I'm told, from a variety of sources. Why is this the first time that all of this data has been compiled at one place at one time?
Well, I think that's a great question. I don't know for sure, but I think it has to do with most organizations tend to be focused on, as you mentioned earlier, a single issue. And part of our mission is to help people connect the dots and see how all of these issues interact. So it was really in our interest to see how these issues look when all brought together. But why others haven't done it in this way, I can't say for
was
sure.
Was this your idea? Was this the St. Charlotte's idea? Or was this an idea of the county and the city and some of the towns surrounding us?
Well, that's an interesting question. So it's something we've wanted to do for several years, but just didn't really have the capacity. But it was actually a county staff person who sort of encouraged us to do this a little over a year ago. So that we felt that was... that was what we needed to kind of make it happen.
I use the word silo. Was that an exaggeration? Because I know that we've talked, I've done this show for a long time, so we've talked repeatedly about all these studies and plans and things, and they're all by different entities within the city, within the county, sometimes nonprofits who do these things. And I always wondered if anybody, what happens to that information that they collect when it's collected by one organization? Was I wrong to say that this was done in silos?
A lot of what happens in government happens in silos.
Okay.
And that's, I think, one of the reasons that I'm happy to, let your listeners know that the city and the county and the towns are collaborating on a sustainability plan called the Mecklenburg Livable Communities Plan.
Which we've talked about.
Which will pull a lot of these various factors, influences, et cetera, that... impact our sustainability as a community as a whole and pull them together and put them in one place, put them in one document so that we can go back and revisit them and understand how one item affects the other or vice versa.
When these things were compartmentalized, before you did this 30,000-foot look down on everything and brought it all together, was the data being collected by these various different studies and organizations even usable, or was it... valuable to a point, but you're working in the dark, essentially.
Well, I think the data was always available, but you'd have to go after it if you wanted it, and then you'd have to spend the time to try to collate it and put it together and make sense out of all the disparate data and see whether or not it would be usable for whatever purpose you wanted to use it for. So I think in this case, the Sustain Charlotte report, as well as the Mecklenburg Livable Communities Plan, is really the first step of really trying to consolidate all the available data, put together strategies, real strategies that we can use, and have a mechanism to track our progress and our success toward meeting the vision and the goals of all the plans that we have out there.
This is a quantitative report card, which is described as an assessment of the current health of the community using 57 metrics spanning 9 issues. What were the metrics?
Well, we'd have to break it down by issue, as you can imagine.
Right.
I don't want to mention all 57 because that might be kind of boring. But I will say
that. What are the 9 issues then?
sure. Well, I'll say that the metrics we chose was based on data availability. So you know, there was metrics we would have liked to have included, but if we didn't have multiple years of data, obviously we couldn't establish a trend for that particular metric. So the metrics chosen were sort of an art and a science between what we thought would be representative of these issues, but also have data available.
And when you say we, who are we?
Mm-hmm. So this report was contributed to by a lot of people. It sort of began with the research of a summer intern we had from Davidson College last summer. But the writing and analysis was primarily done by myself, one of our other staff, Meg Fensel, one of our board members, Jennifer Fairchild, and then we had two different folks working on the graphic design.
I got to tell you, my hat is off to you because this seems like incredibly tedious work. Was it?
It definitely was at times, absolutely.
I mean, I wouldn't even know where to begin to figure out what metrics I would want to use to measure anything in this report. Who told you how to do that?
Sure. Yeah, so in that regard, that was a big part of Jordan's summer project. He looked at report cards like this that other metro areas have already done. So we borrowed a lot of ideas in terms of what metrics to use based on other cities' reports. So other cities have reports like this and counties, and so we looked at those and said, what are they looking at, and can we look at that here?
And you've also made 94 recommendations, some of which, not all, but some of which we will talk about in the course of this hour, for how Charlotte-Mecklenburg can accelerate progress in each of these nine areas that we'll talk about. How did you arrive at the recommendations, and why is Sustain Charlotte in a position to make recommendations?
Mm-hmm. Well, we do a lot of research, and so a big part of our mission is looking at best practices, what's being done around the country, what's working. So a lot of our recommendations are based on, you know, the research that we do to see exactly what is being done. Also, you know, we've been very involved at the local level on a number of these issues over the last 4 years, so we have a pretty good sense of what we're doing and what we're not doing.
Mm-hmm.
But also, some of these recommendations come directly from county reports. So the county does a report every 2 years called the State of the Environment Report. So for some of the issues that have more of an environmental bent to them, we pulled some of their recommendations and included those in this report.
How unusual is it that a city and a county will listen to recommendations from a nonprofit, a non-governmental organization that has looked at all of this data and from various different sources, compiled it, analyzed it, and made recommendations?
Well, we always listen to what everybody has to say. I mean, that's part of
spoken
our job.
Like a true politician.
So, you know, we're always interested in the work that our nonprofits are doing and our community organizations are doing. I think this is, I think, a little bit unique in that the fact that it's looking at issues that no one's really looked at in this way, and I think it aligns really well with the work of the Mecklenburg Livable Communities Plan, and I think it will help inform as we go forward because the data can be recollected and we can continue to analyze these metrics. I think it's a really unique opportunity for us to leverage a lot of the work that's already been done.
John?
I think a lot of these kinds of discussions are happening all over the country. I know I'm exposed to that a lot through the National League of Cities and the conferences that we have, and there's lots of workshops and talks about sustainability. What it means to be sustainable, how do you achieve sustainability, and what are the benefits of working in that direction in your municipality.
And although sustainability is part of being green, it is not synonymous with being green, correct?
Correct. I mean, some people will define sustainability as environmental sustainability, but at Sustain Charlotte, we define it as having an economic, social, and environmental dimension.
Well, I was going to ask you about this because the nine issues that you chose to report on were air quality, energy use, land use, transportation, waste, water use, empowerment, food, jobs, and income. When we talk about sustainability, we do think about environmental sustainability mm-hmm. most often. I don't know that anybody has, at least on this program, ever talked about equity and empowerment as a part of sustainability. We've talked about it, but mm-hmm. not as a part of sustainability, or jobs and income, for that matter. How do they relate to this study and to sustainability?
Well, a lot of these issues, you know, whether we're talking about transportation or food or water or energy, you know, the only way that we're able to obtain those basic needs is through the income that we earn. So a community cannot be sustainable, cannot endure if people are not able to afford to meet their basic needs. Likewise, if we have a community where inequity is growing and some people are doing well, but others aren't, that's not sustainable either. So, you know, sustainability is really about ensuring that all of those community needs are met, not just one or the other.
John, you have said that the city of Charlotte aspires to be a national leader in sustainability. Who decided that?
Well, I think that was part of the goal of advancing the sustainability plan and partnering with the county and the towns to come up with that plan. Mm-hmm. It's a pretty involved process. There's a lot of community interaction, and I hope that we'll have a plan that we're ready to look at, get acceptance of, and begin the implementation of next year.
I think people understand why it's important to be sustainable, because if you're not sustainable in certain areas, you're going to run out of whatever it is, and you're going to be less than you could have been if you run out of whatever it is. But why is it important for Charlotte and for Mecklenburg County to be a national leader in this?
Because we always want to be a national leader in all that we do, and I think that we've got – I think what's unique about Charlotte and Mecklenburg County is that there's so many people here that are willing to collaborate to solve problems, and I think that we have a community environment here that will allow us to move to the next level. And I think particularly for Mecklenburg County, when you look at the issues in the Sustain Charlotte report, Mecklenburg County can impact, I think, a lot of these issues. So for Mecklenburg County, this is a really great roadmap for us to be able to leverage our resources in a way to really have an impact on the community.
I was going to ask you whether, having looked at the results of this study, whether this becomes a benchmark for where we are now or whether it tells you that we're already at being a national leader.
Well, I think a lot of the work that we're doing now will certainly position us as a national leader. I worry sometimes that a lot of our plans and initiatives are more aspirational and don't really have real specifics around how to achieve a certain goal or work in a certain direction. I think by looking at this report card and then evaluating what we're doing with the livable communities plan, we should be able to find a balance to have more actionable items in that plan that can help us.
I think it was the conversation we had on this program a little while ago about the livable communities plan, in which I asked the question, why do we need yet another plan? Because we have, I can't even count them.
I think it has a lot to do with how you started the show out about talking about silos. A lot of those plans are developed for the specific initiative or the aspiration and don't necessarily look at how they may impact another area of our responsibility or how they may be affected by another area of our responsibility.
And I think the goal of the Livable Communities Plan, one of its initial intentions was to take all those 150 plans mm-hmm. that were out there and try to tie them together in some way so that we could track our progress in meeting those objectives.
Well, and to identify any gaps that may exist mm-hmm. and overlap and hopefully achieve some efficiency.
Well, as I understand it, the whole point of that plan was, and it's a joint initiative between Mecklenburg County and the cities and towns surrounding that make up the county, and also the Foundation for the Carolinas, to develop a unified plan on how we live and work and play into the future. And this, you keep referencing this as a valuable tool in helping you to achieve that. Is that what this plan is that we're talking about today, the report card, which is not really a plan, it's a report card?
I think it's a snapshot of how Sustain Charlotte views our sustainability efforts within the city and the county and gives us some challenges and gives us some opportunities.
Charlotte City Councilman John Autry is with us along with the manager of Mecklenburg County, Dina DiOrio, and Shannon Binns. We're coming right back. Support for Charlotte Talks comes from WFAE members and Harris Holt Framing and Art Services. Framing diplomas and vacation photos, a gift that lasts for generations with framed art portraits or family treasures. Located on Kenilworth Avenue in Dilworth, info at harrisholt.com. Tomorrow is one of those days that makes you want to come to work, at least for me. Because it's one of those days that will remind me, I think, of how lucky I am to have had this job for so long to do what I do, because I get to talk to somebody you may not know, but you should. Ann Hampton Calloway. She is affectionately known among her fans as a diva. in the kindest sense of the word, and no wonder, because she is a platinum-selling singer and composer, lyricist, pianist, actress, and has done remarkable things both on and off stage, which we'll all talk about tomorrow, as well as share her music. So I hope you'll join us for that tomorrow at 9.
On the next Diane Rehm Show, scientists are using drones, remote sensors, and mapping software to monitor deforestation and endangered species. But in the wrong hands, these new tools could have devastating effects on wildlife. How technology is transforming conservation efforts.
The Diane Rehm Show this morning from 10 to noon on 90.7 WFAE.
It's Charlotte Talks on listener-funded 90.7 WFAE and 90.3 WFHE. I'm Mike Collins, and we're talking about the community report card put together by Sustain Charlotte recently, and that's kind of a joint effort with the city and the county. Shannon Binns is founder and executive director of Sustain Charlotte. Dina DiOrio is a county manager for Mecklenburg County, and John Autry is a city councilman and also the chair of the Environment Committee for the city of Charlotte. We're going to talk about some of the things that you looked at and what you discovered and some of the recommendations that you are putting forth in these nine different areas in a second, Shannon. But this is a good example, I guess, of using big data, which we've also talked about on this show. This is a huge amount of data that you went through. It would seem to me to be very difficult to make sense of. And usually when you're talking about big data, you're talking about running it through these mammoth computers that analyze everything. Is that how you did it, or is this all done by manpower?
Well, we did use a lot of data, but not quite that much data where we would need that sort of processing. But yeah, you know, we have in the report, all of the data is in there. And, you know, typically we looked at, you know, at least 10, often 15 years of data. So it was a single data point. So for a single metric, we might have looked at the trend over 15 years, let's say. That would have been 15 data points. Mm-hmm. You know, it was a relatively straightforward calculation. We were looking at, you know, average annual change over that period, which is a pretty straightforward calculation using Microsoft Excel. So it wasn't that complicated, but you're absolutely right that this is, I think, an example of where, you know, big data, if you will, can be very valuable. When we look at data, we can really, distill trends and see how we're doing. And I wanted to pick up on something Councilman Autry said earlier. He talked about how a lot of the plans we have are more aspirational. A big reason we wanted to do this report was to emphasize the importance of using metrics and using data. So all of the grades that we have in here are based on trends looking at data. None of it's qualitative. We didn't make any judgment calls or opinions. We looked at how is the data trending. And so I think what's really important and what will be forthcoming in the Mecklenburg Livable Communities Plan will be metrics and actual quantitative metrics where we can track over time our progress in a very objective way. And I think that's what's missing from a lot of our existing plans.
This is more than just the environment and how we use water and energy, but that's part of it. But you say that this report is different from the Mecklenburg County Environmental Report. Is that because it includes other things other than that, or are there other reasons for it being different?
That's the main reason. But you know, in other ways, it's very similar. The Mecklenburg County Environmental Report does track trends as well. And make recommendations. So in that regard, it's similar.
What is this? The existence of this report card do for people like you, Dina, who are, you're managing all the county resources and you're managing tax dollars and you're coming up with budget proposals and you're trying to do that in an informed way. In the absence of this, were you able to do it as well as you might be able to do it in the presence of this?
Well, I think it's just another supporting document to make sure that we're going in the right direction. You know, a lot of the recommendations and strategies that are in this report are also in the Mecklenburg Livable Communities Plan draft. So we know that we are looking at the right things, and it really kind of validates what we've been doing. And it will be another guide as we move forward. So I think it's very helpful.
Because we have so many plans, and this is kind of a 30,000-foot look at all the plans put together and whether they're having any impact, and if so, what that impact is and how those impacts have trended over time, what was my question going to be? How do you synthesize all of these things? I mean, that's a lot of material coming in. Talk about big data. It's big data from all these different sources plus a compilation. How do you keep it all in your head?
I don't think you are going to keep it in your head. I think you're going to keep it in documents and in the material that you work with and refer to as you go about managing the municipality.
I'll just say, too, a great resource and one that we used, the city and county have a dashboard, if you will, called the Quality of Life Dashboard, where a lot of this data is very accessible and easy to digest, if you will.
It's online.
And it's online. Yeah. So we pulled a lot of data from that database.
Okay.
So no one has to memorize it. It's right there on the website, which I can't recall off the top of my head, but it's easy to find.
If it's a county website, it's difficult to get to. All government websites are difficult to get to.
But a comment on the quality of life, the quality of life study, that is, we update that every 2 years. So that data will be updated in 2015. And to Shannon's point, again, that will be an ongoing opportunity for us to continue to update these metrics and track our progress.
And you mentioned a couple of times, Dana, that this is this really tracks along the lines of similar findings and recommendations with the Livable Communities Plan. I understand that the report card shows 18 of 27 strategies that you're currently working on in that plan. They have shared indicators. Is the information from those shared indicators identical? Is it the same? Or did you learn something new because of sustained?
Well, we looked at it. I think we didn't look at it at that level. We looked at it sort of on a macro level in terms of whether or not the strategies are looking at the same thing. So we didn't compare exact data points, but at the end of the day, are we talking about workforce development in the same way? Are we looking at transportation in the same way? Are the things that we are working on align with the things that are in the report? And I would say that they are.
Would the same be true for the city of Charlotte?
Well, yeah, I would have to say yes. There are things that we're challenged with in certain parts of the city that are like, lasers to the middle of the forehead coming from the report card. And one of the things I appreciate is some of the approaches that they've recommended, whether we can actually do those or not, and what it would take to make those kind of things happen, yet to be determined.
Okay. So let's take a look at some of this stuff. And we'll start with some good news, because Charlotte-Mecklenburg is outpacing the national average when it comes to improving air quality. And that, to me, is significant because not too long ago, we had a significant challenge with air quality here. Our federal highway funds were threatened because of ozone pollution that we couldn't seem to get a handle on. And Charlotte gets a B for exceeding the federal limit for ground level ozone, while the nation as a whole gets a C. What did you base that grade, and how did we perform so well so quickly after having these highway funds threatened?
Well, I think you've got that a little bit mixed up. Our ground level ozone grade for the national comparison was actually a D, so we're a bit behind the national average for ground level ozone. That particular air pollutant is the one we struggle with the most, but there are other pollutants where we're making progress. In fact, the other three pollutants that we tracked, we are making progress.
Well, I took that from the Charlotte Observer, where you'll see we get a B and a C.
Okay. Then Charlotte Observer made a mistake on that one.
I knew I didn't get it wrong.
I'll put the correct one in front of you.
Thank
here.
You. All right. So this local trend is a B, air quality B. You just said it was a D.
Ozone.
On ground level ozone. Okay. Yep. But overall, we get a B.
Right. Overall, we're improving on air quality pretty significantly. So that is good news. In fact, for five of the nine issues, I believe we're making progress. And four of the nine, we did not find progress. But this is one that we are. But ground level ozone, as I mentioned, continues to be a challenge. We currently don't meet the federal requirement for that particular pollutant. But it's a tough one, and it's really driven by the amount of driving that we do here. Our tailpipe emissions are a big contributor to that.
Well, we live in this sprawling suburban city where most people have to drive long distances to go to the grocery store and get a gallon of milk or something. So what did Sustain Charlotte recommend to do about that in a city where the geography is pretty much what it is?
Yeah. Well, we sort of addressed that. So we need to curb the sprawl that you just mentioned by building more compact, walkable, transit-oriented communities. And then along with that, doing things like complete streets, right, where we add more infrastructure for cyclists and pedestrians so they have safe alternatives to driving, continuing to invest in our transit system, so that creates another option for folks. So those were two of the recommendations.
Well, those are things that we've heard before, and I think those are things that we are working on, but it's a very slow, sloggy process, it seems to me.
It's expensive.
It's expensive. So how do you this is where the rubber meets the road, so to speak. How do you do that when it is so expensive to do it?
And we've got a trend to reverse, too, because we've spent about the last 100 years building car-friendly communities.
Right.
And how do we change our perception of what it means to be a pedestrian-friendly
community?
And
there's a lot of pushback when you try to make it a pedestrian-friendly community because the drivers own the road. They don't want the bicyclists on there in many cases, and they don't want pedestrians on there in many cases.
Well, I certainly have a firsthand experience with that as I ride a bicycle a lot along the roads in Charlotte and are challenged with gaps in infrastructure to support that usage. And, you know, a lot of motorists say you should be riding on the sidewalk. Well, what do we have? Like 40% of our streets have sidewalks on one side of the road? It's a big gap.
And bicyclists, are they allowed on the sidewalks?
They are not allowed on the sidewalk in Center City.
Okay. How do you reverse 100 years of car-friendly policy?
Well, I think it takes a lot of time. I think the city of Charlotte so far has done a fantastic job in terms of the Blue Line extension, streetcar. Those are fantastic transportation alternatives that we didn't have, obviously, 100 years ago.
And there was a great deal of pushback in getting those built. The pushback continues on the streetcar. There are a lot of naysayers on the streetcar.
And there's a lot of supporters for the streetcar.
Okay.
And I think there's a vision for transit in this community, but it's not just transit. I mean, even Mecklenburg County, you know, we contribute to transportation through the expansion of our greenway network. Mm-hmm. And we're going to continue to expand greenways in Mecklenburg County. So then you have to look at it from an alternative way. And the other thing I will say, if you look at what's happening from a development perspective in Mecklenburg County, you're seeing a lot of apartments because a lot of the younger folks that are coming to live here want to live in Center City. They don't want to own cars. They want to walk. They want to bike. And so a lot of the demographic changes that you're seeing in the county are helping to drive those alternatives because we need to meet that demand if we're going to continue to stay competitive.
Well, they want to walk. I mean, we talked about this a week ago, but you talk about the developments on South Boulevard. There's 6,000 apartment units that have gone up on South Boulevard between South Boulevard and South Tryon Street along the rail line in just the last 5 or 6 or 7 years. And some of them haven't even opened yet. They're just big buildings going up. Yes, they want to ride the light rail. Yes, they want to walk. Yes, they want to bike, and they will. But they'll also all own cars because you kind of have to unless you just want to go uptown on the light rail. So how do you handle all of that? How do you build roads out and try to raise your air quality standards when these people are not only going to be using cars, they're going to be using them in a concentrated area?
Well, to me, it just undermines the importance of expanding and implementing the transit plan we have as quickly as possible. We're behind schedule. Mm-hmm. We have a plan to build a true transit system.
And we are behind schedule. Why?
Funding.
And why are we behind schedule on funding?
A lot of it has to do with the economic downturn, 2008, 2009, 2010. The Metropolitan Transit Commission produced a study last year that said that we do not have the capacity and our resources to complete the plan.
And how much of it has to do with politics and politicians not really being on board with this in some cases?
Probably a lot of that has to do with that. You know, you've got to have the political will and the courage to stick to these plans and find the resources to make them happen.
A partnership between all levels of government, and that's, I think, one of the things we need to build on as well.
Okay. Let's move on to energy use. Let me see if I can get this one right.
I'll turn that to the right page for you.
Because once again, the report card gives us an A. As compared to the rest of the nation, which got a C. Why? Because you point out that we're using 21% more electricity than average Americans do, but 4.4% less natural gas.
Mm-hmm.
Natural gas, I think, is cleaner than much of the electricity that we use because much of the electricity that we use comes from coal.
Right.
So why is that a good grade for us?
Well, you can we called this issue in the end energy use. We didn't really look so much in this particular report at the cleanliness of the fuel just because there wasn't data for us to look at over time. So we were looking more at – how energy efficient we are, how much we're actually consuming. And the reason for the A on, as far as the local trend, is that three of the metrics we looked at were all positively trending. And two of those were looking at the number of buildings we've built that are certified to a higher efficiency standard, one of them being LEED and the other being EPA's Energy Star certification. Okay. So the number of buildings we've built that meet those standards have grown dramatically in the last 5 or 10 years.
We have the 11th highest number of Energy Star buildings per person nationally, and the number of LEED certified building also improving. But when you talk about we use 21% more electricity than the average American in this city, in this region, is that a good thing? Is it a bad thing? Is it neutral? Why are we using more? 21% seems like a high figure. What are we doing?
Well, we suspect that has a lot to do with our climate. So we run our air conditioners a lot.
But Atlanta is hot. Houston is really hot.
Yeah.
Why are we using more?
Well, a lot of city population centers are in cooler climates. We do have, obviously, as you mentioned, a lot of large cities in the South, but we probably have more in slightly colder climates. So that's part of it, but we can't say for sure what's driving our higher energy use, but that would be a part of it. I think there is a lot of opportunity for energy efficiency, though, here as well.
And you've made recommendations in this area, too, among other things, working with federal and state government to ensure tax credits for renewable energy and energy efficiency are continuing. Is that more of a challenge on the state or on the national level? Because it seems that a lot of these things are being taken away at both levels.
Mm-hmm. I think it is a challenge at both levels. I think it's particularly a challenge at the state level. But yeah, those renewable energy credits are always sort of under threat. We don't make those permanent, of course. They have to be approved every year or two, and that's always a political hurdle to do that.
Any of the people in government want to talk about that?
I can't argue with that assessment.
Okay. You're also recommending at Sustain Charlotte that we provide residents with energy efficiency educational materials, but in the absence of affordable options to be more energy efficient, such as tax credits for putting solar panels on your roof, what good are the educational options, the educational materials?
Mm-hmm. Well, certainly not everything requires a large upfront investment. So just as one example, when people need to replace an appliance, whether it's a refrigerator or a washing machine, they face a lot of choices when they go to the store. And there are some models that are more efficient than others.
And they usually cost more.
In some cases they do, but that's not always the case. And I think part of the education is helping people see that while they may spend a few extra dollars at the store the day they purchase it, if they buy a more efficient model, they'll be saving money on their energy bill every month for however many years they own it. So it's helping folks see that longer-term view and say that over the next 5 years you're going to save money if you're willing to maybe pay a little bit more up front.
Is that a hard sell?
I think it is for a lot of people. It really just depends on their means and whether they have the extra money. But I think most people just simply aren't looking at the long-term, taking the long-term view or realizing that they will save money over the long term. I mean, the same goes for cars, right? A lot of times we look at a car, we don't really pay attention to how energy fuel efficient it is. But if you factor in the cost of fuel, many times that car that seems cheaper, the less efficient car, is going to cost you a lot more over the life of that car. So it's just sort of educating people to think and do the math on a longer-term basis.
Shannon Binns is founder and executive director of Sustain Charlotte. We're also here with Dina DiIorio, Mecklenburg County Manager, and John Autry, a Charlotte City Councilman and Chairman of the Environment Committee at the City Council. When we come back, I want to talk about a couple of things you don't normally think about when you think about sustainability. That would be equity and empowerment, and food security, among other things. Charlotte Talks on WFAE. Support for Charlotte Talks comes from WFAE members and the Chiquita Classic Golf Tournament, September 1st through 7th at River Run Country Club, a web.com finals PGA qualifying event with 100% of ticket proceeds going to 40 local charities. Tickets at ChiquitaClassic.com. A Missouri grand jury hears evidence on the shooting death of an unarmed black teenager. Attorney General Eric Holder promises a separate federal investigation will be fair and thorough. Race relations and the search for justice, the topic of the conversation in 20 minutes at 10 o'clock on the Diane Rehm Show. And if you'd like to join our conversation about Charlotte's report card, sustainability report card, I suggest you try this, wfae.org/Charlotte Talks, or search for WFAE on Facebook or Twitter, and we are coming right back.
It's 1814.
The White House and the Capitol are on fire.
President and Dolly Madison have fled Washington.
Some of the wall hangings are actually burning now.
Sailors are rubbing gunpowder paste on all the woodwork around the doors.
It is chaotic.
200 years in the planning.
Team coverage of the British Siege of Washington.
Today on All Things Considered from NPR News.
All Things Considered from 4 to 6:30 on 90.7 WFAE, Charlotte's NPR News source.
Hey, Charlotte Talks on WFAE and WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. Today we're talking about the Charlotte Mecklenburg Sustainability Report Card, which is a production of the Sustain Charlotte organization. Shannon Binns is executive director of that. We're also here with the county manager, Dina DiOrio, and John Autry from Charlotte City Council. Let's talk about something you don't normally talk about when or think about when you talk about sustainability. That's equity and empowerment. And we're a little bleaker here. We're actually at the national average. Both the nation and Charlotte and this region got a C. What do you mean by equity and empowerment?
Well, we looked at several different metrics. I forget exactly how many we looked at, maybe eight or so. So we looked at things like high school graduation rates, housing affordability, percent of income that's going to transportation, things like that, to really look at how folks are affected across the socioeconomic spectrum.
Mm-hmm. According to the data you compiled, an increasing number of residents are spending more than 30% of their income on housing, and the cost of transportation continues to increase. How do you fix that, so that more people are spending less on those things, particularly in a city where housing prices continue to rise and finding affordable workforce housing continues to be a problem? How do you fix it?
Build more affordable housing. And I know that this is an issue that the county and the city have been talking about for a very long time, and the city's very engaged in the affordable housing market, and he can talk more about that. But I think we recognize that as a big issue for our county, and we need to take steps to try to resolve it.
Yeah, I think on the national average of affordable housing for workforce citizens, that for every four families that need housing, there's only like one unit available. And I've had some direct experience over the last year with trying to find affordable housing for people who have been displaced due to gentrification, mm-hmm. or redevelopment. It's been a real challenge. But I think that's also part of what sustainability means, is not just the environmental stewardship, but the quality of life, but also economic development and ensuring that we have good-paying jobs available for the workforce.
And the economic model for building affordable housing, I think, needs to be looked at a little bit differently. We know that federal support for affordable housing has gone away over the years, and so developers that are coming in that want to do mixed income housing and those kinds of things, that's the economics that we need to look at, so it's worth their while to try to build those affordable housing units. And I know the Housing Authority has really taken a long look at that.
These things are all kind of tied together in here, because equity and empowerment, as we're talking about that, you mentioned jobs and income, and in that category, we are at par with the nation. I think we got a C. The percentage of families you report living in poverty doubled from 2000 to 2011. We had an unemployment rate in 2013 that was three times what it was in 2000. But we're still recovering. A lot of that, I would think, would be because of the Great Recession, which was the mm-hmm. worst recession since the Great Depression, from which we are still recovering, correct? So is this an anomaly? Or should we be really concerned about this as we continue to recover? Mm-hmm. Or is this going to be a blip on the radar that we'll just forget about in 5 years?
Yeah, well, the good news is that the unemployment rate has improved dramatically since 2009. It's improving all the time. So, you know, we didn't want to sort of make an exception for any one metric, but we wanted to look at the longer term. So that's what we did. But certainly if you look at sort of 2009 on, we have made some improvement here. But nonetheless, we shouldn't ignore the fact that, one in four children are still living in poverty in Mecklenburg County. And that's something we should all be concerned about.
And what are you recommending that we do about this?
Well, some of the solutions to this are more difficult, as we're saying. There's not a silver bullet. I think there's a lot of things that have to happen. Certainly looking at education is an important issue here, right? Education, as we know, leads to higher incomes, better jobs. So that's one of the reasons we included graduation rate, which is still hovering around 75% and hasn't really improved over the last 10 years or so in Mecklenburg County. So if we can continue to focus on providing better education and getting more folks through high school, that will certainly help.
And what does that mean, better education? Because, you know, when you say that, it sounds like the schools are failing us. Are the schools failing us, or are the parents failing us?
What I meant was getting more people to graduate, helping them succeed.
Once again, how do you do that? I mean, this is an individual. You know, we provide free education for people through high school and actually through college if they will buckle down and take an initiative on their own to do it. And if the parents take an interest in the child's education, that usually has a role to play. But the schools get all the blame for this. And I'm just, you know, we talk about this. We've talked about this ad nauseum. And I keep hearing better education is the key, but it doesn't get better. Why not?
Well, I think the focus needs to be on children and families, mm-hmm. that, to your point. Economic mobility in this county, I think, is an issue. We saw the report that came out by the New York Times, which said if you grow up in Charlotte, North Carolina, your likelihood in poverty, your likelihood of moving up the mobility ladder is very, very slim.
Yep.
We saw the article in the Charlotte Observer the last few weeks about poverty expanding in Mecklenburg County, to parts of the county where it had not been before. So we need to start having a conversation about how we help children and families, provide the support they need, workforce development, training, so that parents have an opportunity to move up the economic mobility ladder, which will help their children succeed.
And this is a national
problem. Well said. I agree with that completely.
Okay. It's a national problem, not just a local problem. Are we worse
Absolutely.
Than the nation?
We're sort of on par with the nation on a lot of these issues. But our graduation rate, I believe, is it on par? Yeah, we're sort of on par with the nation, I think, on that as well. So,
okay. We are below the national average when it comes to food security. The nation gets a C. We get a D. Why is that?
So we have a growing number of people who are experiencing food security. As of 2011, there were 17% of households who experienced food insecurity, which is just simply defined as not being able to put enough food on the table for everyone in the household at some point.
But again, those dates coincide with the recession.
Yes. Well, this was between 2009 and 2011.
Right.
Yep. Absolutely. The recession certainly had an impact on a lot of these metrics.
Have things improved since 2011, or do we know?
We don't know. Someone might know, but we don't have that data.
One of the recommendations, Dina, was to reduce fees to promote construction of full-service grocery stores in the 60 food deserts that we have in Mecklenburg County. So these are places where you cannot buy a fresh fruit or vegetable. What sort of fees are in place that are prohibiting the development of grocery stores?
Well, the fees that we do are building permit fees. That would be the one that we would have the most direct impact on in terms of
Harris
development.
So Harris Teeter and Publix can't afford to pay those fees to put grocery stores in? Come on.
I'm not sure if that's really the case or not. I think, you know, the issue of food deserts has been an issue in Mecklenburg County for a long time. The Board of County Commissioners has looked at that. One of our former commissioners was very, very engaged in the issue of food deserts. And it's really trying to find ways to incent grocery stores to build in low-income areas. And again, it's about the economics. I don't know if it's just fees, but it's whether or not somebody can afford to shop at a Harris Teeter. And if they cannot afford to shop at a Harris Teeter, they're not going to, and so there's no economic incentive for Harris Teeter to build there.
Okay.
So it's
well,
about
it doesn't have to be Harris Teeter.
It doesn't. And so but my point
line.
Is
it could be all
it could be. It could be anything. My mm-hmm. point is that we need to find why what inhibits those grocery stores from building in that area, and it's going to be economic all the time because they're in the business of making money. That's
but,
what
but,
they're there
but
for.
People so. Have I really don't understand this. People have to eat, and they eat something whether they are in a food desert or not. They're eating every day. Why isn't it economical for a company that makes their nut on selling food going to make money selling food in a food desert?
Well, if you can make the same amount of money with fewer stores, that certainly has a bottom line impact on those businesses. But the city is also looking at an ordinance to allow mobile food stores to operate in some of these areas where we have food deserts. And one of the recommendations I'm really interested in is allowing temporary farmers markets on public property. I know of about 80 acres over in East Charlotte that isn't being put to much use right now that could possibly fill some of that gap.
That's a really interesting idea. whose idea was that?
Well, the idea is one of the recommendations from
okay.
but it's not anything that hasn't been discussed amongst my colleagues at the same time as to, in fact, there was a study done by the Urban Land Institute that recommend moving the farmers market from Yorkmont over to somewhere on the east side where it could be more visible, easily accessible, and provide a better service to the community and to those farmers who participate.
There's a big plot of land called Eastland Mall.
It's not a mall anymore. It's just the Eastland property, please.
We did fairly well on this report card in terms of waste and water use. We got B's in both categories. The average resident evidently is using less water, and that's a positive thing. Yet per person residential recycling rates have remained relatively unchanged for the past 15 years. Why are we conserving water but not recycling? Why are we doing that? That seems like we're not putting the two together in our heads.
Well, I'm not sure the two are related, unfortunately.
Well, if you're recycling, I mean, if you're saving water, if you're consciously not wasting water, you have this conservation mindset.
Well, it's possible that the improvement in waste, in water reduction is not a consumer choice so much as it's improved water fixtures in terms of efficiency. So it may just be we're replacing or building, you know, homes and businesses with more efficient.
But where's the thing? We're using 21% more electricity than the rest of the nation. Is that right? And most of our daily water use in our homes comes from turning the light switch on.
In our homes, I'm not sure that's true.
No, it is true. I've done shows on it. Yes. Most of the water use in homes, it comes from turning on the light switch and using the refrigerator.
Oh, I see what you're saying now. I thought you meant most electricity use.
Yes, because it takes water to make the power.
Right. Yeah, in fact, we show that in our report that 95% of the water that's withdrawn from our local waterways is used to make energy. Yeah. So a lot of people don't know that.
Okay, well, I want to talk now, because this goes into this waste and water use section, about an article that was in the paper this morning. I think it was on the front page, which really, I didn't know about this till yesterday, and I can imagine people eating their Cheerios this morning and seeing this on the front page going, what? They're going to do what?
You want to see the emails?
Sure, I'll bet. It's called Pay As You Throw, a proposed pricing system for our disposing of waste. Right now, we put it in those roll-out garbage cans, which I was around when they first decided to roll those out, and you would have thought that the city had proposed killing babies because nobody wanted those roll-out garbage bins. Nobody wanted them. Well, now we've had them for years, and they're just fine, but now you want to get rid of the roll-out bins. Well, hold on now, and make us buy special plastic bags to put our garbage in, for which we will pay money per bag. Is that what this is basically what it is?
Basically, the plan is to bake in the cost of the disposal of the waste into the cost of the bag. And now we're not talking about I know the spokesperson for the company that had done the presentation at the city mentioned that we would not use the garbage bags would not go into the bins. But what we're discussing at the city is that the garbage bags would go into the bin. The company would install cameras on the roof of the trucks looking back at the container, and as the container is flipped up over the trucks, the driver could see if a bag was going into the container that did not was not an official city in Mecklenburg County.
Why not just do it by weight?
I'm sorry?
Why not just do it by weight?
Weight at the curbside?
Yeah, when the thing picks it up, it would know how much the rollout weighs, and subtract that from what's in the can, you'll know how much garbage you've produced.
Well, I don't think that's that indifferent than having the cost of disposing a 13-gallon bag baked into the cost of buying that bag.
So how would this work? We would be charged monthly for how many, and how would we know that the camera got it right?
You pay when you purchase the bag. So you would maybe go to the Harris Teeter or the Food Line and you would buy the bags off the shelf, and that's when you pay.
Special bags or Glad bags?
Special bags.
Special bags.
Right.
I can't use my little drawstring Glad bags anymore?
They will be available also, but they will be official City of Charlotte, Mecklenburg County Solid Waste Services bags.
Ka-ching. So you pay when you buy the bags.
Pay when you buy the bags.
I see. All right.
Can I make one point about this?
Sure,
so first of all, this is not a new idea. This is being used in municipalities around the country and saving those taxpayers millions of dollars a year. We've been subsidizing waste disposal for over 50 years in this country. Government subsidizes it, and there's no incentive for people to reduce their waste at home because it doesn't matter if they put five garbage bags or one, they pay the same.
Well, how would we reduce our waste? Recycle more?
Exactly. And the municipalities who have put one of these systems in place, their recycling rate skyrockets almost overnight.
And can we recycle more than we used to be able to recycle? Because it used to be that most things were not recyclable. Are they recyclable now?
Yes. In fact, the county's recycling facility is adding new materials all the time.
And since if we're truly concerned about waste reduction and recycling, why is it that people in apartment buildings don't have recycling bins, and people in office buildings don't have recycling bins? Why only residential homeowners?
That's also part of the consideration that we're discussing at this time also.
When do you think any of this might change? If you're obviously talking about emails that you've gotten based on that story this morning in the paper, what has been the reaction so far?
Well, as with anything, as you mentioned earlier, whenever the gray bins were first introduced for solid waste services, how the pushback was heavy on that. But now nobody even thinks about rolling that can out on Sunday evening for Monday morning collection. So this is part of what the city has to do with its due diligence process to completely evaluate, fully understand the ramifications and the advantages and the opportunities that we have to improve our solid waste services, because we've got a landfill that is a finite resource. It's not an infinite hole there in the ground in Harrisburg that can just take and continue to receive waste forever.
This is the first of these report cards. Will there be others to follow in the years to come?
Well, we hope so. It really depends on resources like all the things we've been talking about today.
Okay. And can people see this at your website?
Yes.
We'll put the website up on our website, but it is very easy. It's sustaincharlotte.org. Sustaincharlotte.org. Shannon Binns is the founder and executive director of that. Dina DiOrio is Mecklenburg County Manager. They'll be using this material in the future to go forward and make everything a sunny, wonderful place. And John Autry is Charlotte City Councilman and the chair of their Environment Committee. Thank you all.